Today's topic is time value of money, and we're going to spend most of the day actually in kind of a workshop mode, actually doing problems and going through things. But I just want to set out some of the basics for you. Sometimes when you see these formulas, or when people see formulas and they're not used to using formulas all the time, it looks a little bit imposing. But this is actually a very, very simple concept. So let's go through the basics, and then we'll start to look at the problems and break you up into groups based on the calculators that you have. Now, you all know how to do a future value calculation. And if you've read the calculator book, they start you out with present value calculations, which seems a little bit backwards to me. Most people understand the future value calculation. If you have $100 and you put it in the bank, and we're in the good old days, and you could earn 5% on your deposits in the bank, how much would you have at the end of the year? $105. You earn the $5 of interest, right? Everybody knows how to do that. Well, how can we express that mathematically? We take the present value and we multiply that by 1 plus the interest rate. So all we're doing with the 1 is making sure that we add what we have to the interest rate. So in this example, we have $100 that's been invested. Multiply that by 1 plus the interest rate, which in this case is 5%, and that will give us our $105. Now, if we took the $105 at the end of the year and left it in the bank, we would have at the end of that year 105 times 1 plus 0.05, which would give us 105 and 25 cents, I believe. I'm just roughballing it, but it gives you a little bit more than the $5, because now you're earning interest on the original $5 that you earned. So in essence, what's happening here is we're taking the $100 and we're multiplying it by 1 plus the interest rate for each year that we invest it. So if we invest it for 2 years, it would be times 1 plus 0.05, and then multiply that times 1 plus 0.05. And if it's 3 years, we add another 1 plus 0.05. So each one of these terms is added because we're investing for another period. So the way we can shorthand that from an algebraic standpoint, since these are all the same, right? These are exactly the same term. What we do is we'd say that the future value is going to equal the present value times 1.05 raised to the number of periods, raised to the n. And all that means is that we're taking this and we're doing it that many times. So if we look at a future value calculation, we just take what we have now times 1 plus the interest rate raised to the n. Make sense? Pretty straightforward, right? So it looks, again, if you don't like formulas, sometimes this stuff can look imposing, but when you think about how it applies to a simple thing like a bank account, it kind of makes sense. Now, if we want to flip this around, let's say we know we're going to get a certain amount of money in the future, and we want to figure out what it's worth today. Well, if we're going from today to the future, and we multiply to get from today to the future, what do we have to do when we want to move from the future back to today?
Divide.
We have to divide. So the present value, if we want to calculate this, would just be the future value divided by 1 plus the interest rate raised to the n. So all we're doing, in essence, for those of you that remember your algebra, is we're dividing each side by 1 plus I to the n. Right? And then since these two terms cancel out, we've got the formula. So it's exactly the same formula. We've just manipulated it so that we can solve for present value now instead of future value. So it's a very, very simple concept when you consider it from that perspective. Now, from a financial planning standpoint, everything is going to be derived from this. We can manipulate these to figure out the number of years we need to accumulate a certain lump sum based on an interest rate. If we know what we have today and we know what we're going to have in the future, we can manipulate that calculation to figure out what interest rate we're earning on that money over that period of time. We can do, it's just a manipulation of that same calculation. So relatively straightforward. Now, in financial planning, we're going to use these formulas to look at a few different things. First of all, if we want to know what the future value of something is, we might have an investment, for example. If we invest $10,000 today and we expect it to earn 8% over a period of time, we might want to know what it's going to be worth in the future. so that we can use that for retirement funding or education funding or what have you. We can use the future value calculation that way. Sometimes when we're doing education funding and retirement funding calculations, what we want to be able to do is figure out how much we need today so that I can have a fixed lump sum in the future. And the fixed lump sum in the future is going to be the result of one calculation, and then we can take that result and present value it back to today to figure out what the lump sum is today. We'll go through a few of those examples today. Retirement funding and education funding calculations are really just are formulas that involve multiple rounds of the time value problems. So relatively easy to get through. Does anybody have questions on the basics? That's about all we have to talk about with the basics. Now, another way to think of this, and this is helpful sometimes for people, is to use a timeline approach. And usually the way you have a timeline, and when we have an outflow, you can think of that as a down arrow, and all the inflows coming from an investment would be up arrows. So if we, and each of these ticks represents a time period. So in this example, we'd have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 time periods, maybe some initial investment, and then we get some investment return over that period of time, and we're trying to figure out how much we're earning based on the interest rate. So sometimes spreading it out on a timeline is helpful. When you get to things like education and retirement funding, we're going to be using a concept called an annuity, and you're all familiar with annuities, right? Annuities are payments that come in over a period of time. There are two different types of annuities. There are ordinary annuities and there are annuity dues. An ordinary annuity will begin making payments at the end of the first period. So if I make an investment today, if I buy an annuity contract today, October 2nd of 2010, and it's going to make an annual payment to me on an ordinary annuity basis, October 2nd of 2011, I'll receive my first payment. So I have a whole year to wait before I receive the payment. Now think about an education funding example just real quickly. I just want to get you to think about these time issues. If I have a child born today that's going to go off to Harvard at age 18, right, because all these brand new kids are going to go off to the best schools. We always want to plan for that. And I'm going to fund their education by saving a lump sum at the end of every year. How many years do I have to save for the kid's education so that I'll have all the money I need to pay for it when the child reaches age 18? 17 years, not 18. Why is it only 17? Right. When am I really starting to save? I'm really starting to save when the kid reaches age 1, because I'm going to save at the end of the year. So I only have a 17-year period to accumulate. If I start saving immediately, how much time do I have? Another year, I have another period, so I have 18 years. So that would reduce the annual cash flow need to save for that education fund. So when you look at education funding or retirement funding, be sensitive to this. And when we start to look at the annuity calculations, by the way, whenever you have an annuity calculation to do on an exam question, the very first thing you should always do to your calculator is reset it either to beginning or end of period. Because what happens sometimes is you'll come across a problem that'll ask you to calculate an annuity due. And you set your calculator to the beginning of period setting, which calculates the present value or the future value of an annuity due. And you get the answer and you say, oh great, what's on my calculator matches option B, so I'm going to pick option B and move on. And then 10 questions later you come to another question that deals with an ordinary annuity, and you punch all the numbers in and you get an answer. And that answer on the calculator matches one of the options. The problem is you didn't reset the calculator back to beginning of or end of period for an annuity due. And whenever you see the annuity questions on exams, I can guarantee you that one of the wrong answers is going to be the correct result for the opposite calculation. So you've got to make sure, you've got to discipline yourself. I know in an exam you're stressed, you have time, you feel time pressured, you're concerned about getting through all the problems and so on, but whenever you see an annuity question, make sure you reset that calculator to the appropriate period. That's the first thing you should always do. Okay? So just a few issues there. Now on the calculators, generally what we're going to have are financial function keys. And those of you that have the new version of the 17B, the HP 17B, will have a little bit of an adventure today as we go through this, because I haven't been able to get a hold of one of those yet to play with. But usually we have four function keys: the future value, the present value, interest rate, and N, which is the period register, that we're going to be using. And then there's also another function that can be useful when we're looking at annuity type calculations, and that would be the payment key. So really five of these. But for the basic calculations, you only have four variables. These four variables equate to what you see in this formula. We have present value, future value, interest rate, and N, right? N is the term, I is the interest rate, future value is what the money's going to be worth in the future, present value is what it's worth today. If you have any three of those, you can solve for the other one. And that's all the calculator is doing for you. If you plop in three of these values of the top four, and then you solve for the other one, you've got your answer. You don't have to do the algebra or worry about manipulating the formulas. It's all done on the computer for you. We'll get to the annuity problems a little bit later as well. So those are the keys you want to use. Now, another thing that you want to be aware of with these time value calculations and the calculators: if you do a time value calculation and then you come across another problem and there are still items in the registers for those calculations, you could be getting a wrong number when you come to the result, because you haven't cleared those registers. So for normal time value calculations, one thing you want to probably do just on a routine basis, and if you get used to this when you're practicing, when it comes to the exam, you'll do this. You see a time value coming up, you'll just automatically clear your calculator while you're reading the problem, and it really won't take any extra time, but clear the registers. If you have a problem that builds, and you'll have those in the classes, you won't see those typically on the exams unless it's a case. And the cases, sometimes they'll ask you questions that you might have to go through a series of questions to get to the right answer. If the items are still in the register, you can just change one of them and recompute and get the new answer. So if you were looking for, if they were looking for the difference between this option and that option, and the only thing that's changing is, for example, the investment rate of return, maybe we're going to have a more conservative portfolio allocation instead of a more aggressive portfolio allocation, all we'd have to do would be to change the interest rate and resolve for probably the future value in that example I gave you, but resolve for future value and we have the number because all the others are still there. So clear the registers for each new problem. And make sure on annuity problems you always have the calculator set the right way. And by the way, if you have it set for end of period, you're going to be right more than you're wrong. Because most of the problems that are annuity problems are probably going to be ordinary annuity problems. So if you have to err, set it for end of period as opposed to beginning of period, because you'll probably miss fewer questions that way. But the best way is to make sure it's clear. Okay, questions? Very short introduction to basic concepts, but I think a lot of you probably have seen this before. You've done it. Many of you are practicing, so you know kind of how this works. So now what I'd like to do is just split up into the groups. Now, I see a lot of people with 12 Cs. I see some people with the Texas Instruments. Well, let's put the 12 C people over here, if we can. We'll get how many people have 12 Cs, by the way? Oh, wow. We're going to have a couple groups of 12 Cs, or it's going to become unruly. And what are the other ones? Texas Instruments? Any others? The 10B2? Okay. And you've got the new version of that, right? Oh. Okay, we might have to work on that. Because it has those menu things, and it's probably just as easy once we figure it out, but... Okay, you know how to do that? Well, let's put the two of you together then. And you can teach me. You can teach me today how to use the new calculator. So that's good. But anyway, since we have so many HP12C people, we'll move them to one side of the room and put everybody else on the other. And then we'll start to... And by the way, if you have your calculator book, keep that out as well. This book. Because I'm going to use some of the problems in this to go through the material. I know. I didn't realize how many people had the 12C.
I used to use that one.
Oh, I love this calculator. This is the easiest of the ones to use.
Yeah. This one is pretty good as well.
Was that the 10B2?
Yeah, the only difference is really how you input the function.